Next up, we're going to be hearing why infrastructure investing can deliver the best of the best. And to present that, we have Nat Micklem, who is joining us from 91, one of our general sponsors. And he is going to be arguing that South Africa has a deep savings pool, which, if channeled effectively and conservatively into infrastructure, would not only be able to achieve commercial returns, but also curb unemployment and meaningfully address inequality and poverty. In the session, Nat, who is a portfolio manager and co-head of South Africa and Africa Credit at 91, will share lived experiences. So the human experience and outcomes of investing capital into this asset class over the last 15 years. So ladies and gentlemen, our attention please, and a round of applause for Nat Micklem from 91.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sanke. Wonderful introduction, and I think if you really wanted to keep the presentation short, that was largely it. You covered virtually all of the highlights. Yes, so I will try and keep it short today, just to leave some questions for later. As already mentioned, my name is Nat Micklem. I have been with 91 for about 10 years now, with a responsibility for credit. And so you might hear some dumbing down of some pretty technical concepts today, and that's largely because of the nature of the work that I do, the investing that we do. With credit is often a lot simpler than the esoterics of fixed income and interest rates, and certainly on the equity side. So first of all, just in terms of where we find ourselves today, I think it's quite clear for everybody in their personal capacities, in their professional capacities, and these are very different slides to Stephen's, so apologies, I'll try to bring out the highlights here. But really, in simple terms, we're at rock bottom as far as confidence goes, personal confidence, investor confidence. That's largely as a result of 30 years of underinvestment in our infrastructure. We see that today in our daily lives. I think both on a domestic front where we've undershot our targets, but also on a global front where we find ourselves as South Africans in the bottom quartile globally of investment in infrastructure. Yet we have one of the most developed emerging market financial systems, where you see we have about 14 trillion or so of assets that are there ready to be deployed into these spaces. I've been involved in countless discussions with foreign investors wanting, either through government or private, looking to put capital into South Africa. But truly, there's a lot of capital here domestically that could solve a very large part of this problem. And not only is it large, but it's also pretty impressive in terms of the stability of these financial institutions. I'm talking banks, I'm talking obviously insurers, various brokers, structurers, etc., the underlying teams, the people that are there. And if you marry that up with public policy, you get some pretty impressive circumstances. So obviously the REAP program that everybody will be very familiar with, just in terms of the scale, how quickly that got rolled out, when there was the political will to do that, and of course the results, not just in terms of power, but also in terms of how affordable that came through towards the end. So a fantastic example of when there's alignment, what you can do. Now, what is still required is a bridging of the gap between a whole lot of capital and the underlying investment opportunities. And one big step that needs to be made is a mind space opening into alternates. We call it alternates. What is alternates? It's not equity. It's not listed. It's not listed debt or buying government bonds. This is a esoteric, quirky space. But if I just wanted to illustrate that globally, that space has grown from about a 7% allocation to 26%. That this is a 2020 figure. So that's roughly 20% per year. And that is where infrastructure typically resides. And you can see globally some of the big global pension funds, what they're doing in terms of allocating into infrastructure. South Africa is well behind that, but I don't want to single out a specific pension plan. This is really it's a thing more broadly across the whole industry. People are under-allocated into the space, and so there's obviously been a lot of regulation that has been coming down the pipe. But certainly from our perspective, this is something which we think is critical and a bridge that we need to actually build over a number of challenges that people mentally face when they consider this. So first of all, in terms of returns, the risks that you face, the tenor of these investments, they're typically long-term, very illiquid. There's the technical understanding of something concrete that you don't, or for example, on the digital side, what can change over the next 5 to 10 years and how will that put this whole investment at risk? There's obviously the government support and I think also importantly, a lack of pipeline. I think a lot of asset owners have been approaching us saying, that's great, we understand, we buy into this, but really, where is the pipeline? So perhaps just the first thing I want to try and clarify is that infrastructure is not an asset class. It's not an asset class. Infrastructure is something more fundamental than that. I think we know a lot of those boxes on the left. There's always questions around the last one, what does other mean? But basically, if you look at the Reg 28 definition, it's exceptionally broad. But if you really had to try and summarize it, is what provides the backbone to the economy and allows everything else to grow off the back of that. How can you access it? And this is where it starts getting a little bit technical, but corporate finance, so that's typically on to companies, to balance sheets. These are companies that operate and have very diverse assets sitting on their balance sheets versus project finance, which is more ring-fenced in nature. That is a very specific project, say, for example, a toll road, a bridge, an IPP, where the cash flows are measured out, the costs are measured out, and very specifically this is kind of put together to make something that is viable but is ring-fenced to that specific project. So you're really taking that concentrated view on that specific asset doing well. So not only that, but you also then need to decide how you want to invest in either the corporate or the project. And you can do that through debt, you can do that through equity, and there's something in between called mezzanine as well, which tries to bring the best of those worlds together. Clearly, totally different risk associated with when you're investing in equity versus investing in debt. I mentioned credit. I find myself at the top, so certainly a lot easier decisions get made over there. But equity is absolutely critical for the space to grow. And just to clarify that I'm really here as an industry representative. I think each one of these blocks is really necessary for that to take place. It's not advocating any one specific, but just to try and break this down into when we talk infrastructure, there are just so many ways that you can go about accessing that. On the liquidity side as well, very different whether you're sitting in private equity or whether you're sitting in public equity, so shares that are listed on the exchange. I think we're all very aware that the SA market or the list of investable opportunities on the exchange has been reducing, but certainly on the private side, there's a huge amount of activity that's taking place. Stephen was mentioning in the previous presentation. So on the public side and on the private side, both again, on the equity, on the debt, and to an extent even in the mezzanine space. And then lastly is how one actually goes about accessing that. Again, it comes down to big projects that perhaps you want to back in your backyard versus funds that take probably a more diversified approach to everything. So just to try and lay it out, infrastructure is not an asset class, but infrastructure can be accessed through a variety of asset classes. This is just an example of a public-private credit fund, and you can get a sense here of the volatility that you experience throughout this period. This is largely underpinned by corporate infrastructure, not so much project infrastructure. But you can see over a period of about 15 years, they're making roughly 4x the money and outstripping cash plus 5%. So in today's terms, you're talking about 13 or 14% in rand terms. But just in terms of what's possible. But I think more importantly, that this is across a very diverse set of investments. So again, if I could convince you that infrastructure is not an asset class, I also want to convince you, probably quite counterintuitively, that infrastructure is not an industry either. So if you have a look at all of these at the top there, they are all influenced and impacted by infrastructure. Many of them need infrastructure to exist. And so while you find some very direct companies that physically build out the infrastructure, there are also quite a few that it is not their core business, but they are going about building it themselves as well. And that obviously alleviates a lot of the demand that's being placed on, as an example, the grid or technology and a variety of others. There's also a lot of financial providers in this mix here which have got really smart around the use of proceeds and the way that finance is actually channeled into the space as well, which can also be supported. So it's exceptionally broad. If you have the ability to go both public and private side, equity and debt side, there's actually a lot of underlying places that can be reached and really gives you a very nice, diverse ability to access the space. In terms of the best of the best, I mean, if I could just try and contextualize that. I started out as quite a big cynic on infrastructure many years ago, starting in the financial space. And if it's not already obvious, I'm definitely not an actuary. I'm also not an engineer. So kind of what context do I have? Well, it's just simply having been involved in the financial space for some time and sitting alongside infrastructure colleagues over many, many years and taking quite a while to come to the conclusion that from a financial perspective, it makes sense. And then also from a developmental perspective, it makes sense. And I'll touch on that on the next slide, just how that kind of perpetuates itself. But just financially, I think the one conclusion that a lot of us come to is, okay, why are the returns not more attractive? Why are they not higher than where they are at the moment? A lot of these projects are specifically built such that the project can actually pay for itself. That's one reason. But the thing that really makes it work is that third box down there, which is the low volatility and the low default rates. And so that, it's incredibly perplexing. But these are long-term views that you're taking. Yet the experience is that many of these are very solid and actually go about performing exactly as they were expected. There are all sorts of structuring buffers that get put into place. And so ensuring that the project does indeed become a success. And I think the little blurb stipulates it there, but African infrastructure is disproportionately good even on a global basis in terms of how it actually performs, obviously on the upside, but very importantly on the downside as well. And that's what certainly as a financial investor gives me a huge amount of comfort that to the extent we're taking these views, our experience, although the returns might not be extraordinary, the returns are good enough. The downside is really where there's an amazing amount of protection. And why that is probably that second box there, which is these are pretty defensive and pretty predictable. They are typically monopolies. They are providing essential services. And at the end of the day, there's a government or there's a consumer or a business that's prepared to pay for what this infrastructure is offering. The correlation, I think, is pretty much speaks for itself. I mean, it is alternate. So already you're going to have a step down in the correlation. But also the stability of the cash flows is compelling. And, of course, the fact that quite a lot of these are long-term, which you don't get very easily in a lot of other asset classes. In terms of, I say, the best of the best, the second aspect of that is that, of course, infrastructure really gives us the backbone for growth. I mean, it's certainly a big part of why we are growing as anemically as we are today. What we see today and what we have been seeing over the last few years is really going to set the tone for the next one or two decades. In terms of pensioners and their retirement needs, I think certainly one major epiphany that I had was that to the extent that a pensioner actually gets decent financial returns out of their portfolio, at the end of the day, that it needs to be spent on something when somebody retires. And if you don't have access to basic goods and essential services like water, like power, like roads, waste services, etc., that certainly impacts the quality of your underlying retirement. So hence the best of the best in terms of you can actually get some financial return whilst at the same time doing something about where you're going to find yourself in 10 or 20 years' time. I mentioned before there are multiple ways to access this space, different asset classes, different liquidity metrics. I do think there is a very important step that people need to take in terms of understanding how alternates operate and how that would work within a portfolio. The fact that it's an essential nature or essential nature of the good, the fact that it's very defensive is obviously something that underpins cash flows, which ultimately is what a lot of us look to when we're making these investment decisions. And that the outcomes do indeed go beyond financial returns. So a lot of the SDGs that get spoken about, a lot of this noise around transition and everything else that needs to take place, this is how that actually ultimately gets addressed. And I think what's also important is that the investors and the information that we're getting out of these underlying projects is getting more and more impressive in that there's a lot that can actually be communicated quite directly to ultimately, trustees that are sitting on the boards and the people that sit behind that. So just in terms of what infrastructure looks like, I mean, this is obviously pretty feel good. The one thing that I don't have to worry about is the passion and the energy with which the people are that I work with. So it's quite different perhaps to other areas of the financial industry where I think if you're involved in any one of these projects and you actually see the outcome of what these things deliver, there's a huge amount of, I'll call it a joy and energy that people get out of this. And if you speak to anybody that's directly involved in infrastructure, you'll find out pretty quickly there's more than just financial that actually drives these people. And I think that is something that really will trickle all the way through into pensioners and trustees, etc. So let me conclude there just by saying, obviously, with the infrastructure that this provides, it really is a huge enabler to other businesses that operate around it. And this is really quite a big virtuous circle. The question is just how you actually access the opportunity in a way that is conservative enough and that you're not taking a venture capital type view, even though that is possible in infrastructure. So thank you very much. I think I've left a few minutes for questions after the warning before.
You most definitely have. And before I allow you to take questions, Max, is the microphone on?
I'm about to make an announcement asking you to speak into the microphone when you ask questions, because this session is being recorded, so we want to make sure that we're capturing those questions. I'm going to allow for 2 to 3 short and sharp questions, please, ladies and gentlemen. So any questions for Nat? There we go. We've got one question over there, and we can start preparing for one or two more questions, please.
Thanks so much, Nat. I'm just curious as to the trajectory that you've seen on a pickup in, I guess, both interest but actual money being put in by pension funds and private individuals, I don't know, let's say over the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, so I mean it's quite enormous, although I think we've literally just scratched the surface. It's different areas that are leading here. So I think certainly we've seen banks plowing into the space hugely, but it's really just scratching the surface in terms of what's required. When you say interest, you're not referring to interest rates, you're referring to the actual capital that's actually going into the space. Yeah. So, I mean, there's quite a lot. What we need on one of those previous slides there is a lot of equity to catalyze the space. That is typically where the idea, the concept stage comes about, and then the rest of the capital forms around it. And certainly we've seen quite a few funds pop up there on the equity side, obviously large balance sheets as well. The beauty around the more balance sheet approach as opposed to the project approach is just the speed at which you can actually go out. But I think you would see it on a daily basis, obviously on the digital technology side. So I think most people in this room probably have access to fiber. Telecoms is quite impressive in terms of where we're at. That's all supported by data centers, by subsea cables, by all sorts of other things on that vertical. And and certainly people that have spotted that opportunity early, I say early, these things are typically have kind of a 5 to 10 year lead time, have done exceptionally well.
Hi. Would you say that it's the private sector's risk tolerance or government's policy stubbornness or incoherence that's holding this type of investment back?
I think it's a bit of both. If I could not be forced to take a particular view there. I mean, certainly policy is massive, and just speaking as a quite plainly and simply as an investor, confidence plays a massive role, and that's partly why you have very, very few foreigners holding our domestic government bonds today, and all the FDI has just simply not taken place. We haven't done ourselves any favors there. Do I see green shoots? Absolutely. There are plenty coming aboard, and I mean, there will be, you know, tens of probably close to about 50 companies that are applying huge amounts of money into their own power generation capability as we speak. So the minute that you have a little bit of positive shift on the public front, you do see it mirrored on the private side. And then more broadly, I'd say similar to what Stephen was saying earlier, it's just that the private sector does step up where it sees a gap. I mean, it's a very capable, very skilled, and very entrepreneurial country. And people do take advantage where they see a big opportunity.
Yeah. Anat, thank you for the presentation. Something that stood out was that the default risk, especially on African infrastructure projects, is so much lower. Do you also see the returns on these projects being proportionally lower, or does the returns remain almost the same as par on the global scale? And
No. So the returns are definitely higher than what you see on the global scale. But if I could try and draw some sort of a range, you're talking a matter of 2 to 3%, I would say. between developed and emerging markets, or kind of Africa is almost at the extreme of those emerging markets. And so there's definitely a pickup in terms of return. But I mean, are they the 20% and the 30% that people kind of jump to when they think Africa? Absolutely not. And the reason for it is that these things are very well structured. They typically have a lot of, for example, equity sitting behind them, or if you're an equity provider, you have the right tariffs built in. And so there's a lot of buffer. I would say it's kind of, at the moment, it's largely driven by supply-demand mismatch. So whether it's in the SA context, whether it's in the Africa context, it's kind of the same challenge, which is there's a lot of demand for good infrastructure projects, but not a whole lot of capital that's actually backing it yet. That will hopefully change over the next 5 to 10 years.
Hi. Let me say, I'm really glad you talked about it not being an asset class. Great. But the problem is, how do we get this embedded? And that's going to be hugely dependent on the ability of people in this room to be able to model the damn thing. And model it in a context where you long-term savings can actually look at the problem of where do I allocate and how do I allocate. Mm. And the problem that we have is that we haven't built. I mean, I look at the work that EdHEC Infra has done, or Infra EdHEC, I can't remember. I don't know if you're familiar with their work. But what they've done for Europe is really important, which is how do we collect all the data? And right now it all sits in different pockets, and it's impossible for me as an academic to pull in that data from a collective area. How do I actually start modeling it in terms of the risk-return trade-offs? And more importantly, what do I benchmark it to? You know, and so those challenges we haven't even remotely addressed here as an investment society or an actuarial society. And so where do you see that impetus coming from? Because right now this is all really privately held, and we're going into a world that if we don't work collaboratively on this, we're not going to get there.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you for that question. That's really getting to the nub of it, and kind of partly why I'm here, but also partly why there's quite a lot of frustration, I would say, generally within the industry, within alternates, is that people need data to really assess it. These things, however, are really at, I would almost say, the embryonic stage. And so there is no data. So if you ask about, for example, African infrastructure, I can probably point you to maybe two or three potential places, but it's not the, you know, what you would, if you pick up a report on infrastructure in Europe, or pick up a report on infrastructure in the US, or private equity, or project finance, it just doesn't exist. So certainly we've been very voluntary, open, transparent in terms of the data that we've got over the last 15, and it's not just us, there are others as well, but over the last kind of 15, 20 years, it is still, I would say the data is still exceptionally concentrated, but it is coming to the fore now. And I think what we're almost thinking is that what we need to do is really provide opportunities for investors to dip their toe into something. So start on the least risky aspect of this. As you mentioned, it's not an asset class. Yeah, I mean, we can certainly make it available. I think as there are a couple of saving societies where this is obviously being promoted, and that's potentially someplace we could put it. Big rating agencies could do it on the debt side. Yeah, on the equity side, I would imagine something like a SAVCA or an AVCA, for example, should be able to collate a lot of that data across people. But people give a lot of data quite voluntarily. So if you look at kind of GPCA, or it used to be Impia, on the emerging markets, I mean, all the data there of underlying transactions, number, returns, etc., it's all provided. So certainly the education part will certainly do our role in terms of making that data available. And I do think we're getting there. We've definitely seen some positive developments and positive steps. And the question being asked more and more is just simply, how do we actually begin to access it? I think people are bought into the fact that, okay, this is what it is. I understand what it is. The technicals around being an engineer, and as I mentioned before, I'm not one, but trying to get to almost like an engineering source of understanding each and every underlying transaction, I think will be exceptionally challenging and will take people many decades to get there. But a way that you can short circuit that potentially through funds or potentially through some more blended product is probably a better way to go about it. And ultimately, the proof's in the eating. So the returns and the experiences that people have in terms of benchmarking, your other question, at the moment, I think it's largely absolute. So it's largely you're talking total returns, and I think it's largely the promises that get made up front. I think it's probably the place that you can hold people accountable and to. I think it's a bit harder on the VC or private equity side, but certainly as you get with infrastructure, you've got a slightly easier job in that there's quite a lot of predictability around the returns that are coming through. And again, as the whole system evolves and there are more and more players, I think it'll become a lot easier to actually start benchmarking. Great. Time for one more, please. Yeah, I would say, again, it's typically not the return front where you see that. So I think anybody that looks at infrastructure might look at the return and say, okay, well, you know, for the tenor, for the types of risks that are coming at me, is that appropriate? I think the comfort that I'd want to give is on the other side of that equation. There's an enormous amount of structuring that takes place in terms of assessing what's appropriate. And these things are not built at the margin. They're not kind of to the extent that there's a 10% reduction in light or wind, et cetera, this project is not going to succeed. Instead, the buffers are far more significant than that. So a lot of it is compensated for in the underlying assumptions and stress testing that takes place. And I would say it's an inherently conservative bunch. I think that will change, hopefully, in 20 years' time, where there's just so much activity. And that's, I think, why you see higher default rates, even in places like North America. It's just there's so much more capital chasing the opportunities, and so people get more and more aggressive on their assumptions. We're nowhere near that on this continent, I would say, both in SA and the rest of the continent. I hope that's answered. Great. Thank you very much. Thank you.